Glasgow Airport reopens after a botched car bomb attempt. Northwest will preemptively cancel flights to reduce delays. And is the world ready for a commercial space station? This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, July 2, 2007. Security officials in the UK sure missed some sleep over the weekend. First, on Friday, two abandoned Mercedes, loaded with gasoline, gas canisters, and nails, were found in the heart of London's nightlife district. Then on Saturday, police say two men crashed a Jeep Cherokee SUV through the front doors of the terminal building at Scotland's Glasgow Airport and set the vehicle on fire. A total of four arrests are reported, including two in England and the two occupants of the SUV in Scotland, described by onlookers as two Asian males. The events come near the second anniversary of the July 7, 2005 suicide bombings that killed 52 commuters on the London transit system. In Saturday's incident, witnesses reported that the Jeep evaded several security checkpoints, rushed the terminal at about 30 miles per hour, then swerved and crashed through the front doors. At that point, the Jeep apparently got caught in debris. Witnesses reported tires smoking as the driver tried to move the vehicle farther indoors. Then, witnesses told British news media, a man holding a lighted gasoline bomb got out of the passenger side, dumped a liquid from a plastic container, and set the vehicle, and apparently himself, on fire. The driver was subdued by police and bystanders before he could escape, and one bystander was injured after being hit by the SUV's passenger, according to the BBC. Despite the smoke damage and mayhem, airport officials say the terminal and all its gates were back to normal operation within 24 hours after the attack, which happened about 3:15 p.m. local time on Saturday. As of late Sunday, anyone with a flight arriving at or departing from Glasgow was urged to call ahead for flight confirmation before making the trip to the airport. Last week was a tough one for Northwest Airlines. The carrier began the week having to cancel 12% of its flights due to a shortage of available pilots. By Friday, according to flight stats, that number was down to 2%, but Northwest has announced plans to preemptively cancel flights to address the problem through the summer. Effective July 18th, the carrier will drop one of its two daily flights between Detroit and Frankfurt, Germany, and about 40 domestic flights. According to Monty Montgomery, a spokesman for the Northwest Unit of the Airline Pilots Association, the carrier has emerged from bankruptcy with too few pilots to handle normal operations. The pilots' contract limits them to 90 flight hours a month, and the FAA limits them to 10 more overtime hours beyond contract. When flights are delayed by congestion or thunderstorms, pilots can run out of allowable hours before the end of the month, leaving the airline short. Northwest recalled 326 pilots to work last year and has 396 remaining on furlough. That's according to the union. Montgomery says it will take about 500 more pilots to ensure the airline can handle its normal schedule. Tawat Wakaidit, a member of the Thai Parliament, was among 101 people who died in 1998 when a Thai International Airways Airbus A310 crashed in a swamp on a third attempt by the pilot to land in heavy evening rain at Bangkok. Now, the Associated Press reports that his family has filed suit against Airbus, seeking just over $3 million for negligence, lost income, and mental stress. The lawsuit claims the plane was designed and manufactured, quote, without the exercise of perception and carefulness, as should be expected. It could lead the airplane into a stall condition in some situations, and if by chance there was the fault of the electrical system occurring at that time, then it would cause the airplane to crash, unquote. Airbus spokeswoman Marie Cajolet said, quote, the accident has been thoroughly investigated by the Thai authorities, as well as the French Accident Investigation Bureau and the American NTSB, as per ICAO recommendations. We have nothing to add to this exhaustive report, which was published several years ago, and will not comment further, unquote. The Thai government has never publicized any official findings that it may have made about the cause of that crash. Bigelow Aerospace says that on Thursday last week, it successfully launched Genesis 2, the second test of an inflatable module which could be used to build a commercial space station. Thursday's launch took place in the Orenburg region of Russia, aboard a Russian Dnepr rocket. The launch was reported to have gone as planned, unlike the launch of Genesis 1 a year ago. That first mission had a few communications glitches, but did successfully reach orbit and continues to send back pictures and telemetry. The Genesis modules start out about 15 feet long and 4 feet in diameter. When they reach space, air contained inside is allowed to expand in the vacuum of space, inflating the flexible shell to 8 feet in diameter. Bigelow Aerospace says its research suggests the tough skins of the modules, made of a graphite fiber composite, can survive encounters with space debris much better than the walls of the International Space Station. The company envisions a private sector space station in Earth orbit, made up of a number of Genesis structures joined together to become Nautilus, a space station with about the interior volume of a three-bedroom house. The International Herald Tribune reports that Robert Bigelow, founder and owner of the Budget Suites of America hotel chain, has committed $500 million to make Nautilus a reality by 2015. Up next on ANN, an accident during landing claims the life of Quest Aircraft's Bruce Kennedy. Homeland Security's biometric exit check program appears to be stalled. And China's ARJ-21 poses for its first pictures. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for July 2nd, 2007. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Bruce R. Kennedy, who led Alaska Airlines' expansion as an international carrier, died on Thursday when his single-engine Cessna 182 crashed into a high school parking lot during a landing attempt in Cashmere, Washington. According to the Chelan County Sheriff's Office, the plane went down about 7 p.m. local time, when it hit a parked flatbed truck in a tree before stopping a few feet from a house and catching fire. Kennedy, who was 68 years old, was found dead at the scene. He was the only person on board. The NTSB has begun an investigation. Kennedy was on his way from Hot Springs, Montana, to visit his grandchildren in Wenatchee, Washington. Kennedy had flown to Sandpoint, Idaho, to visit Quest Aircraft, where he was the board chair, then on to Hot Springs for vacation. Quest was formed in 2000 to design and manufacture aircraft to serve the needs of mission and humanitarian flying in challenging parts of the world, as well as commercial missions. The company's Kodiak, a turbine single being produced at Quest's Sandpoint plant, is on the verge of receiving a type certificate from the FAA. Beginning in 1972, Kennedy served Alaska Airlines as a director, chairman, CEO, and as its president between 1978 and 91. He oversaw Alaska Air Group's acquisition of Horizon Air and Jet America. He continued to serve on the board of Alaska Air Group after his early retirement from the company in 1991. Following three decades with Alaska Airlines, Kennedy left the company to pursue humanitarian efforts with his wife. They traveled to China with the Christian group Educational Services International and volunteered with World Relief. Kennedy also served on the boards of several Christian organizations. Quest Chief Executive Paul Schaller called Kennedy a great visionary and a great human being. Quote, his inspiration and dedication to Quest will be greatly missed, unquote. Following a congressional hearing on Thursday, lawmakers said they had serious doubts that the Department of Homeland Security can implement a border security exit system in airports by the end of next year, as promised. U.S. Visit identifies people using two fingerprints and a photograph. It's currently in use to monitor who's entering the U.S. The program has, so far, processed more than 76 million visitors and intercepted about 1,800 immigration violators, as well as people with criminal records. But the part intended to track foreign citizens leaving the country isn't working out so well, according to the Associated Press. The system has been plagued by problems, including technical issues. James May, president of the Air Transport Association, went beyond criticizing the program's timeline. He challenged the notion that the airline should pay for this program as the government wants. Quote, at the end of the day, it's a law enforcement function, unquote. AP reports the biometric system is used on the entry side at 116 airports, 15 seaports, and 154 land ports of entry. The exit portion has been tested so far through trials at 12 airports and 2 seaports. None of the $462 million 2008 funding request for the program is designated for development of the exit side of the system. The aviation world is focused on the rollout of Boeing's first 787 Dreamliner this Sunday, but there's another first plane taking shape which may be even more significant. Final assembly began May 30th on the first ARJ-21, a mid-sized jet capable of carrying 70 to 100 passengers, in a hangar in Shanghai. Photos of the partially completed plane have been proudly released. China's first airliner is being developed by AVIC-1, a group of 6 companies and aerospace research institutes. The aircraft is designed to cope with China's climate and terrain, including the hot and high altitude conditions in western China. With its exploding domestic economy, China is spending billions on imported airliners. The Xinhua News Agency recently featured the accelerated homegrown large airliner program and the prestige it brings to the nation. China has plans to quickly become an aviation power. Embraer has a factory there. Airbus plans to build A320s in China. And even the FAA recently opened an office in Shanghai to streamline Chinese manufacturers' applications for U.S. certification, with the side effect of increasing Chinese orders for U.S. parts. Test flights for the ARJ-21 begin in March of next year. There are already 70 orders from Chinese airlines, including Shanghai Airlines, Shandong Airlines, and Xiamen Airlines. The National Transportation Safety Board is investigating an incident in Boston that occurred on June 20th, in which an American Eagle Embraer ERJ-135 regional jet briefly touched down on the runway without the landing gear extended before initiating a go-around and completing a second landing attempt. None of the 37 passengers or 3 crew members were injured. Prior to the first landing attempt, the crew said the 3 landing gear indicator lights were all green, indicating that the gear was down and locked. Shortly before touchdown, they noticed a landing gear lever disagree message on a flight computer console. After the jet contacted the runway, a go-around procedure was initiated. The crew extended the gear using an emergency procedure, then flew by the control tower twice for a visual inspection to ensure the gear was down before successfully landing. Investigators have been able to recreate the problem on the aircraft involved by lifting the plane on jacks. An electronic component of the landing gear control system, made by Parker Aerospace, was bench-tested this week. That same unit, with small modifications, was then placed in a different airplane and the indications were once again duplicated. Embraer issued a field service letter late last week to all operators of the EMB-135, 140, and 145, reminding pilots to follow the checklist in the case of a landing gear disagree message. The FAA, Parker Aerospace, American Eagle, and Embraer are working with NTSB as the investigation continues. Still ahead, Honda Aircraft breaks ground for its North Carolina facility. NASA sends the Mars rover Opportunity on a high-risk mission. And an 18-year-old pilot uses a rented plane in an ill-advised stunt. You're listening to Aero News.
Higher, faster, farther, safer. Those are the watchwords of Columbia Aircraft Manufacturing's new generation of personal airplanes. The Columbia 350 is a normally aspirated four-seater that carries 1,100 pounds and cruises up to 190 knots with a next-generation Avadyne or Garmin electronic cockpit to show you the way. With a max range of 1,300 nautical miles, the Columbia 350 is the plane that you deserve when you're a businessman on the go or a Sunday flyer in a hurry to his next great adventure. To schedule a demo flight in a Columbia 350 or a turbocharged 400, call 541-318-1144 or check them out on the web at flycolumbia.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft merges the most advanced technologies from the fields of hearing science, aviation communications, and performance audio. Clarity Aloft headsets use Comply Canal tips, composed of soft, viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. The noise-canceling microphone is optimized for speech frequencies in high-noise environments. The low-profile headband is featherweight and comfortable. Just three reasons why you need to feel and hear the difference a Clarity Aloft stereo headset can make for you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headsets on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, July 2nd, 2007. I'm Paul Plagg. Honda Aircraft Company broke ground on a 369,000-square-foot headquarters and manufacturing facility in a ceremony last week at Piedmont Triad International Airport in North Carolina. Taking turns with the shovel on Wednesday were representatives of Honda and the cities of Greensboro, Winston-Salem, and High Point. The company announced in February that it would establish its world headquarters and jet plant in Greensboro. The facility will be the center of all type certification, sales, marketing, and service support for the Honda jet, as well as continued research and development activities, and eventually employ more than 300. Honda plans to begin deliveries of the jets to customers in 2010. The first phase of construction, which will consist of 219,000 square feet of offices, research facilities, and a hangar, is scheduled to be completed in the spring of 2008. The two robotic explorers, which landed on Mars in 2004, named Spirit and Opportunity, were sent to the Red Planet on a 90-day mission. Now, 3 years later, Spirit has come up lame with one of its six wheels frozen on its axle. With final mechanical failure looming at any time for both rovers, mission managers are planning to send Opportunity down the huge Victoria crater to see what's there. They acknowledge it might be unable to climb back out, but say the risk is worthwhile. The scientific allure is the chance to investigate the compositions and textures of exposed materials in the crater's depths for clues about ancient, wet environments. As the rover travels farther down the slope, it will be able to examine increasingly older rocks in the exposed walls of the crater. A meteor impact millions of years ago excavated Victoria, about 4 miles south of where Opportunity landed in January 2004. The impact-created bowl is a half mile across and about five times as wide as Endurance Crater, where Opportunity spent more than 6 months exploring in 2004. Steve Squires of Cornell University, principal investigator for the rover's science instruments, hopes this won't be a one-way trip for Opportunity. Quote, "We still have some excellent science targets out on the plains that we would like to visit after Victoria, but if Opportunity becomes trapped there, it will be worth the knowledge gained," unquote. The Jet Propulsion Laboratory manages the Mars Exploration Rover Project for NASA's Science Mission Directorate. Back in the old days, when you TP'd a house or your school, you did it from the ground. Christian James Blackford buzzed Detroit's Harrison High School in a small plane at less than 500 feet earlier this month, dropping toilet paper and paintballs. The June 7th end-of-the-school-year prank got the 18-year-old recent graduate a ticket from local law enforcement and the possibility of up to 90 days in jail and a $500 fine, according to the Detroit Free Press. But because he was apparently less than 500 feet over a school, he also flagrantly violated FAR 91.119. If he made a big enough mess with the paintballs to have created a hazard to property, he also could be in violation of FAR 91.15, which is titled simply dropping objects, unquote. When a high school principal investigates a TP incident, it's usually a pretty short investigation. But we're talking federal government here, so Blackford faces an agonizing wait to find out whether he'll have his pilot certificate suspended or revoked. FAA spokeswoman Elizabeth Isham Corey says the agency's investigation into the TP incident is likely to take several weeks. And finally, if you're an air traffic controller, you normally work in a darkened room in a secure building where the public can't see you anyway. So why does it matter what you wear? That's the question from the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, whose members used to work in T-shirts and sneakers, but are now bristling under a new FAA dress code. Remember dress codes in high school? Remember some of the wacky things kids wore to protest the rules? Here are some recent examples of protest clothing donned by controllers, as related by NATCA to the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the Associated Press. Some male controllers abided by the letter of the law by wearing dresses to work. A male controller wore aquamarine pants and was told his trousers were, quote, not gender appropriate, unquote. A female controller in New York was ordered to wear dress shoes, despite having a doctor's note saying she needed to wear tennis shoes because of a knee problem. She ended up falling, breaking her elbow, and injuring her knee. Miami controllers were reportedly informed they could no longer wear tropical shirts, even though they have collars as required by the dress code. Then, management reversed the decision and now allows tropical shirts with muted colors. One controller wore a purple shirt, mismatched purple tie, white pants, purple socks, and purple snakeskin shoes. His attire was entirely within the dress code. Melissa Ott, a controller in Cleveland, observed, quote, in light of all the problems facing controllers in the FAA, it seems silly that the agency has become the fashion police, unquote. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. Bob will share some important thoughts and anecdotes regarding density altitude, which is a factor in many summertime accidents. And if you haven't done so already, subscribe to our AeroCasts. You can find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.